every Arizona homeowner's best friend.
And it all has to do with you.
Thanks for tuning in.
It's Rosie on the House, your weekend wake-up tradition.
Country boys and girls getting down on the farm.
Come on around back, Arizona. It is Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, our outdoor living hour. Brand new Saturday to the first Saturday of the month. So we're talking farm fresh commodities with Arizona Farm Bureau spokeswoman Julie Murphy. And we try and talk about whatever is coming off of our local farms and ranches so we can connect you, the Arizona consumer, to, you know, your local commodities, support your local agriculture. You're going to eat anyway. Why not eat something that's coming right out of your backyard? Not only is it fresher than something that's trucked in, but trucking it in. And you know, sometimes we have to. Avocados. I love avocados. There's an avocado grown in Arizona. It's got to be trucked in, so there's a larger expense bringing those commodities into state. So the more we can utilize what we grow right here in our great state of Arizona, the better I think it is for not only our consumption.
Right.
But yeah. It supports our local farmers and ranchers.
Yes. And my Midwest relatives love my Yuma farmers in the winter when they ship all those leafy greens. So we're not going to give that up. But today I have John Boltz with Desert Premium Farms from Yuma. We made him hop in his tractor and head all the way over to Phoenix. No.
How long does that take?
That's about a 2.5 hour run. Not too bad.
What kind of tractor do you drive?
Well, it's fast. It's a Ford tractor, actually.
It's a Ford.
It's a 16-valve tractor, I'm assuming. Good night. Yes.
No, but John was gracious enough in his busy season and busy time. And just for point of fact on what's being harvested right now, because we're kind of cycling through a melon season, and the fall season for cantaloupe is also coming up. But wine grapes, several of our wine grape growers are already harvesting for the wine grapes here in August in the peak of the heat. But John, go ahead.
Well, and before you jump off, since you mentioned the wine, with your 100 years of Arizona Farm Bureau, you're celebrating with an organic, locally grown beer
Centennial
and wine.
Red. Mm-hmm. Yep, it's the Centennial Red. And by the way, you can get it at the tasting room at Yavapai College, their Southwest Wine Center. Thank you for the props on that, because we just released that and just announced that, and we had to talk to a farmer Friday on it. But today, because our commodity focus is conventional and organic farming, the two methods, I thought, oh, what better person to request than John Boltz with Desert Premium Farms, because he's utilized and managed and farmed both methods. So that's why we've got him. But we thought we had you here 2 years ago. But John, we got to be updated. We've got new listeners and listeners that might not remember. Tell us about Desert Premium Farms, what got you and Alicia, your wife, into farming.
Thanks, Julie. Yeah, we own and operate Desert Premium Farms along with our partners, Kent and Jenny Inglett. And we're based out of Yuma and farm all over Yuma County. We farm about 2,000 acres year-round, so we'll typically have two crops off of there, winter crop like vegetables, spring or fall crop like cantaloupes or that sort of thing. Then we grow on a typical year, we'll grow durum wheat, cotton, alfalfa year-round, and a few other odds and ends that we throw in there. So we stay pretty busy all year. Now is our slowest time of year for growing crops. But it is a busy time of year for tillage as we get the ground ready for plantings coming up here in late August, early September. So we'll be trucking on through that stuff. And the main crops that we're growing right now are Sudan grass, alfalfa, and cotton. So if you enjoy your denim jeans, then we've got cotton to make them out of.
So let's pick, because this is just based on what you just told me, how many crops in a given annual cycle. Let's take one of your fields. What's the potential number of varying crops that can be grown in that one field in a 365-day period?
Most fields is going to be two crops, and we'll put them in pretty close one behind the other. For instance, if we're growing a vegetable crop that's going to harvest in November, we'd be planting that in September, but we'd be preparing the ground in June, July, and getting it ready so we make sure we have a good crop in. And that's our high dollar crop typically. And then our more volume produced crop, but we still do a good job of producing it, we'll put it in very quickly behind that crop. So as a vegetable crop wraps up in say November or December, we'll have another crop planted within sometimes just a couple of days, or for sure within a month.
So within those, and I think you said that your family partnership right now, you guys are doing 2,000 acres. There's a variety and a variation. It's very diverse, it sounds like, what you guys are managing in a given year.
Yeah, it's a good friend of mine regarded it as organized chaos. We got a lot going on out there in the field. A lot of the fresh vegetables are hand-harvested. The melons are hand-harvested. The other crops, thankfully, not. But, you got a lot going on to get it planted, have it ready on time. Because everything that we're growing vegetable and melon-wise, it's not just, well, we'll pick it when it's ready. We actually have a target date or couple-of-day window that we want to harvest that crop. So we're aiming for that target regardless of what Mother Nature throws at us weather-wise. And we hit it about 97, 98% of the time, which takes some doing, you know.
It's one of the reasons we farm in Arizona. We have 300-plus days of sunshine, less weather, dramatic weather occurrences, so we can be a little bit more consistent in our production. But you're a generational farmer. Your dad farmed. Talk about this legacy of farming in the Boltz family.
Yeah, so my grandfather and father farmed in Nebraska, but farm economy was pretty rough in the late 70s, early 80s, and my dad decided it was probably better to try farming somewhere else instead of just going further into debt. So he had studied all over agriculture all over the world when he was in college at the University of Nebraska in their agronomy program. And so he looked at California, looked at Blythe, California and Parker area, and then looked at Yuma. And he really liked the year-round growing opportunities that we have. He had tried to diversify. He and my grandfather diversified into a wide range of crops. For instance, they grew potatoes for several years. And my grandfather said, one year we grew potatoes. We made so much money growing potatoes, we didn't think we'd know what to do with all that money. But we planted potatoes the next year, and that took care of that problem. So, you know, it's just farming. But they farmed, and my grandfather farmed on ground that his parents had purchased when they moved into the United States. But there have been Boltz's farming going back to when they started giving people last names in Europe. So
that is so cool. So, you know, we're talking conventional and organic. And again, one of the reasons I brought you in is because you've done both. This year marks the 20th anniversary of the United States Department of Agriculture's organic food rules. So this is a perfect time to celebrate this diversity of methods of farming. So talk a little bit about why you've done both, why you may do both in the future. What's the gig on that one?
Yeah, the organic production and producing to USDA's organic standards really provides for consumer choice. It's been driven by consumers desiring organically produced products. And USDA decided to create a standard so that everybody in the country and imports could meet that standard and be labeled as such with USDA certified organic. And much like you'd sit down to cook something in your kitchen from scratch and you'd have a recipe, there's a recipe for growing things organically, and then there's a recipe for how you might do it conventionally. They end up producing a very similar product. In fact, they're frequently the same. If the organic producer has a good fortune, they're going to look very similar. And it's just a little bit different method of producing the same crop. I've grown quite a variety of different vegetable crops organically. The one we grew the most of was spinach, but we've grown quite a few different herbs and different things as well. So.
Can I ask why? Because I believe you're not doing organic right now. Is there any? Can I ask why not?
Yeah, some of the folks that are very, very large organic producers are producing probably about what the market can demand right now. And although typically there's a little bit better price for organic produced crops, it does cost more to produce that food or that fiber, that fuel organically. So,
and that's the proposition. It's a high-value crop, and they can, because of what it takes to grow organic, some of the steps they have to go through, they can ask for a premium price from the customer.
Yeah, and they need to get it too because, you know, it is more expensive. It's more frequently more labor intensive, especially vegetable crops. It's more labor intensive. Weed control in particular is much more challenging. You have to plan ahead, do some particular weed control steps in advance of planting the crop and during the crop that conventional producers don't have to do. So in some ways it's less efficient. But it is, again, growing it to a standard that is based on consumer preference.
Some interesting data here from the USDA. Basically, the organic food rule allows certified companies to feature, quote unquote, a USDA organic seal on their packaging. And since this seal was approved, it has helped U.S. organic food markets expand from less than $8 billion in sales in 2000, only 21 years ago, to more than $50 billion in 2019. So there is a demand, and there has been an increase, obviously, over this 22-year period. And then the goal of the USDA certified organic designation simply fortifies trust in the fast-growing organic market. When they began that process, as I talked to farmers, it was a very fragmented market. This USDA certified organic seal has clarified that a little bit. And we'll talk more about that, right?
I want to talk about that, and I want to talk about what the Secretary of Agriculture, who oversaw the organics label designation, a gentleman by the name of Dan Glickman, said, quote, "Let me be clear about one thing. It's not a statement about food safety, nor is organic a value judgment about nutrition or quality." So if it's none of those things, then why do it? We'll talk about that right here at Rosie on the House.